The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Characteristics, that's probably accurate for most of you, maybe all of you here, is that you are living what in Buddhism is called a lay life. You aren't living in a monastery, chances are. You're not living at a retreat center. You're not on retreat, but you're living in the world where you probably have to take care of all kinds of things. You might have to go shopping for your own food and maybe cook for your meals. You might have to go to work. You might have family to take care of, homes to take care of, all kinds of things that you got to do, social lives to take care of, many different things. And some people find that this so-called lay life is has its challenges, keeps you busy, and sometimes makes it hard to find time to really devote yourself to a mindfulness practice, a Buddhist practice, meditate enough. And occasionally people then long for the wish, if I could only go on retreat. That's where it's really at. Or if things were a little bit different, maybe I could be a monastic for a while. And, you know, it'd be nice to spend a year kind of immersed in, you know, in a monastery setting and just be saturated with Buddhism and practice and all these wise other monastics who are kind of floating on clouds and dispensing great wisdom and kindness and compassion. And, it'd be so great to be in these places and instead of around these people I have to live with and, challenges and all this. And so there's a kind of yearning sometimes for us, occasionally, for this kind of the Shangri-La of a retreat center, a monastic center, a chance to devote yourself to practice a lot and a kind of forlorn feeling, well, you know, lay life is second best or third best or fourth best, really, you know. I'll do the best I can and hope someday I'll. So I want to offer you one practice or one piece of instruction for living a lay life that could make it comparable to being on retreat or being comparable to the values of being in a monastery. Because the difference between lay life and retreat life or monastic life is not that great, actually. And so it doesn't take that much to kind of tip the whole, direction towards lay life being as productive as retreat life, monastic life, or even more so. There's lots of people who live in monasteries. You know, if you go to places like Thailand, most Buddhist monks do not meditate. they're wearing their robes and all that, and you can go to a Buddhist monastery, I don't know about now anymore, but when I was there many years ago, it wasn't uncommon to go to a little Buddhist temple or Buddhist monks, and they're sitting around watching TV and smoking their cigarettes, and they take care of some of the pastoral needs of their village, their community, but they don't really devote themselves much to meditation. It's actually a very small percentage of monks who actually meditate in Thailand. And so you think, oh, if only I could be a monk. Well, you might watch television. Chances are in our society you don't smoke. the fact that someone's living a monastic life doesn't automatically mean that they're getting the full benefits of that life. So it doesn't take that much to kind of, in a lay life, to get some of those benefits and that can come from it. So I want to offer you one thing that you can do that can really kind of tip it in that direction and really enrich your life so they get some of the benefits of so-called monastic retreat life or whatever. And so it's very simple. And that is, when you do something, do only one thing at a time. That's all. Just do one thing at a time when you do it. And when you do that one thing, do it. Just do that. Do that one thing. Like, really give yourself to that one thing. So an example from many years ago in my life was I noticed that For some reason, I was going to go from one side of my home to the other side of the home. I think I was going to go take the laundry from the washing machine into the dryer. That was the task, was to go across the home to the laundry area. And I noticed that on that way, and my home was really small, all these things got my attention. Oh, this needs to be put away. This needs to be looked at. Oh, look, there's a magazine. I haven't opened it yet. And, you know, I should see what's in it. And then I have to walk by the front door. You know, I wonder if the mail has come. Maybe I should go out on the street and check the mail. And so the one task that I had set myself to do was to walk across the house to the laundry area. That was the intention. And all these things pulled me left and right. So it's, you know, it was innocent enough. It wasn't like a necessarily an unethical thing to, to, you know, get pulled left and right and do all the other things. But I didn't get the benefits of doing one thing. To set the intention, I'm going to walk across the house, come to the laundry area, and just, that's what I'm going to do. I'm walking across the house. I'm not going to let all these other things pull my attention, unless the house is burning down, then maybe. But I'm just going to go, this is what I'm doing. And or if you're cooking a meal, just cook the meal. Maybe don't have the TV on or the radio on, or don't try to be efficient and do 2 to 3 different things at once and, you know, be on the phone. Because it's, you know, why just cook your food if you can be talking on the phone at the same time, right? I mean, it's just so efficient. It gets things, you know, you get more done that way. And even better if you have the TV on. You can't have it on talking, you know, if you're talking on the phone and cooking, but at least you can have it on silently. So you can be tracking the TV and what's going on in case important news things come up, talking to your friend on the phone and cooking. And then it probably have to go, you know, get the bandage too for, as you chop your vegetables and you chop more than you should have. Just do one thing at a time. If you're chopping vegetables, just chop the vegetables. The mind wanders away, come back. The mind doesn't want to be there, has desires for other things. Fold that back into just being right here. Just for this. Just for this. If you're going out to do the laundry, just walk to the laundry area. Don't get distracted by anything. That's the intention. Just do that. If something else gets your attention, make a mental note. Later, I'll look at it. I'll deal with it. If you are washing dishes, if you are talking with a friend, just talk to a friend. If you're walking out to your car in the parking lot, just walk out to your car. What it would be like just to park your car a little bit further away than you have to, in the far end of the parking lot, and use that walking to only walk, to do this walking meditation, so that you're in the walking, you're in your body as you walk. You're not in your thoughts thinking about what's for dinner or something else. You're just walking. Give yourself over to doing one thing at a time. If you do that a lot through your day, you'll get a lot of the benefits that come from being a devoted, monastic, renunciant, someone who really gives themselves over, you know, to be a professional or, you know, lifestyle of living a religious life. It's remarkable what benefit you can get. Just do one thing at a time and really do it. Be there for that activity. Watch your mind so your mind doesn't go off into other thoughts. Just be there for that. Be there for what you do. One thing. Do one thing at a time. Isn't that great? That's all it takes. Is it too demanding? Oh, yes?
I have a question about listening to music.
Listening to music. It's beautiful to listen. Sorry?
Is it like if you're listening to music while you're washing dishes, does that count as a second thing?
So if you're doing dishes and listening to music at the same time, does that count as doing two things at once?
Yeah, because I have music in my house on all the time, so I don't think of it as being a second thing, but now that I'm asking you, I guess maybe it is.
Well, the answer is not from me, but from you. Experiment. Try it different ways and see what the benefits are. Sometimes the music and the washing dishes becomes one big thing. That's the one thing. It just feels like you're in this one thing that includes that. Or it could be that you're washing dishes, but you're not really there because you're singing along with the lyrics. You know, that's really where you're at. So so I would just experiment both ways and see what brings you the most sense of presence and engagement to here and now. I remember when I was at Zen Center many years ago, I was a brand new student there, and I had this idea in Zen, you do one thing at a time. And I showed up at breakfast, and one of the senior Zen priests there, I think it was Philip Whalen, was at breakfast, having his breakfast and reading the paper at the same time. And I'm like, what? This must be unethical. You know, so I went up to him and said, what are you doing? You're supposed to do one thing at a time, and here you're. And he said, I'm just having breakfast and reading the paper. And he helped me so much to relax around this stuff, not take it too seriously. So you have fun. Yes?
I feel like the instruction is very clear, and I spent time practicing in that way. But currently, I'm having great difficulty in actually resting in the one thing at a time. So is there any additional guidance you can offer us to the how to do it?
Well, I admit many things I could say, but what comes to mind is maybe you're trying to be one with the wrong thing. Maybe what you need to really become one with, really kind of do one thing and really get into, is what is it that makes it difficult? What's taking you away? What's making it hard? What happens if you turn yourself over to that? Any comments? Does it seem relevant enough? Great. Thank you. What? Wow. We never get questions here. I touched... Yeah, please. I must have touched something here.
Yeah, you touched a nerve. So in clarification for what you just suggested with her is, let's say you're feeling anxious or desire comes up about wanting to do something else. So just be present for that. Just
You have to be wise and know what's appropriate, right? I mean, right. If you're, you know, at someone's funeral.
Yeah, I'm not talking. I'm talking dishes.
Dishes.
You know, just something simple.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, then you have to be wise, you know. But you know, sometimes the dishes got to get done, you know, and it doesn't matter what you think and what you feel, and you just got to do it and to deal with it. But sometimes if you're anxious or angry or something, sometimes you want to give yourself over that completely. And different people have different ways of doing that are wise. And like if I'm angry, what I like to do is go for walks. And I just give myself over to the anger and just let it be there and course through me. And I find it just be angry, just like that. Or some people find being sad, it's really wise just to be sad. And I find, that's not really an issue for me, but meditation is a great place to be sad, because your idea is to keep your spine straight. So you don't succumb to it. You don't give in to the sadness. Oh, poor me. But just let it be there and just let it, one thing, just sad. Be a sad Buddha, they say. So when you're doing dishes, you know, you have to decide whether the dishes need to be done or your sadness needs your full attention. If sadness needs your full attention, then maybe you go sit down someplace. If the dishes need to be done, let your sadness wait. Or the wonderful skill, you know, it's possible to do both. And just be a sad dishwasher. It's even better if you can enjoy it. That's the thing about doing one thing, giving yourself over to one thing. There's a kind of a, I don't know if joy is the right word, a kind of a satisfaction to just do that. Even if it's like your sad dishwasher, just be that. And as opposed to all the kind of like, I shouldn't be doing that, I should be fixing it, I should be doing something else, what am I going to do? Just be sad. It makes life a lot easier. And then it allows sometimes a deeper process to unfold that can't unfold if we're not really there. One more and then we'll...
was wondering what monastics would do with their iPhones. I think everything you're saying makes a lot of sense, but there's always this phone, and I know there's an expectation for my job especially to always know what's on that phone.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, this is an issue, I think, for many of us, is the frequency in which people check it, the frequency when there's a ping saying messages come and we have to know what's going on. And I think we have to get really wise about this and have really clear boundaries and limits to how often we do it, when we, because, you know, give yourself over to do one thing and then we keep getting interrupted by that phone in some ways, and we're expected to be interrupted. So how are you going to do that, negotiate that, is a big issue for our society. Some people find that they turn their phone off for periods of time, even 10 minutes. 10 minutes, this next 10 minutes, no way. And that's committed. Or for an hour, I'm not going to check it for 1 hour, and the world's not going to come to an end. And that, just that can make, give you some of the benefit. And then when you check it after the hour, do one thing, just check it. Or there's a universe in your phone, right? Just check the email. Don't check the news. Just the email. And then just give yourself over fully to this, just that. And my favorite smartphone monastic story, I don't know if it was still a smartphone, but Ajahn Amaro, who was a wonderful monk, a long time ago, he had one of the first things, phones, that could be called a smartphone. I think he could do email on it back then. It was really unusual. And it was really expensive. It was like $1,000 thing. And it kind of looked like what we have nowadays with a smartphone, but it was an early version of this kind of idea. And I saw him with this fancy phone. I just had a flip up, you know. And I said to him, Ajahn Amaro, what are you doing with this luxury item, this phone? And, keep him accountable to it, right? What are you doing? And he said, oh, a supporter, some friend of his, they gave it to me. It was a gift. I find it useful. But I decided that I can only accept this if someone comes along and asks for it, I would give it to them. So I was tempted. Mostly I was tempted to find out whether he really had that freedom to hear. Anyway, so good luck.